Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 29th of July, recording at 8:24 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. It is also my last audio for a month, although I'm leaving you in good hands, as Owen Tracy will be in the hot seat while I am away. Now, first, I always run through the highlights very briefly. And in terms of global stock markets, Asia continued strong in here today, but in Europe and Wall Street, we're seeing a little of the signs of fatigue here. Hardly surprising. A bit of profit taking coming in at the end of the week. Markets are a little long in the tooth, but rallies rather are a little long in the tooth. But we would need to see some pretty clear downward dynamics to indicate more than a brief pause. In government bonds, U.S. Treasuries falling sharply on the reasonably good U.S. GDP figures. More on that later. U.S. dollar in the balance here pretty much unchanged today. Precious metals, reasonably good day. Once again, particularly platinum, that was very strong, up $12.50. Oil back above 60. Those are really the main highlights. Okay, let's get back to these stock markets first in terms of that big picture long-term outlook. Now, I've written a lot about these markets in the comment of the day, so I'll be a little briefer this time around. But you know my view. I maintain that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, long defined here as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields. This is what happens following secular bear markets. I think that the S&P index, for instance, will have a glass ceiling at about 1575. That's a lot higher than it is right now, currently 1236. And I don't expect that 1575 to be tested anytime soon. But again, I say I think it'll have a glass ceiling up near the old 2000 and highs, just as the Dow had a glass ceiling at about 1025 for a better part of a generation. And we see this lengthy mean reversion process. Now, just because Wall Street is in a secular mean reversion bear market, that doesn't mean other markets are doing the same thing. I maintain that Japan, for instance, is in the latter stages of a lengthy base development process. Remember, it had that secular bear from the beginning of 1990 right on through till the 28th of April 2003, if you're looking at the Nikkei stock average. Asian emerging markets, also, they were hit hard by the Asian crisis in 1997, got clobbered again when we had the NASDAQ bubble burst and then the 9/11 sell-off, and valuation compression there was quite pronounced, so there's really quite good value there relative to, say, Wall Street. And elsewhere, we have the resources boom. This is really quite exciting, and you've seen the effect on some of my favorite stock market groups, notably oils and industrial metals. And that followed about a 21-year, depending on how you measure it, but who's going to quibble over a year or two, secular bear market, and I maintain that they are now in a secular bull market. So these are the some of the very, very interesting areas, my two big themes of the decade, and they have been my decade themes really since 2003, and that is that supply and elasticity, mainly the industrial resources, but also precious metals, that would be an area where we would see a very, very big boom. And the Asian emerging markets with India, my top favorite of all. Although, again, looking a little overextended here, India is in the short term. So That's the overall background, Wall Street's secular bear, and these bull markets that I've just described. What will Europe do? Well, I think it's kind of high beta USA. In other words, it'll outperform on the upside and probably fall more during these sell-offs, as well. That's what it's always done. Now, hope springs eternal that markets are going to uncouple completely from Wall Street, but it's never really happened, or at least not for very long. And so I've talked extensively about what I describe as the Wall Street leash effect. It's a little bit like a dog walker. And when Wall Street is steady to rising, then the leash is extended, and other markets have far more freedom to romp. And the ones that I had just mentioned a few moments ago are among those that will certainly romp the most. And when Wall Street catches fright and starts to fall for a few weeks or more, then the leash is going to retract and they'll be dragged down as well. However good the story may be, people will grab profits if only to offset some losses elsewhere, or because they see some selling pressure in on Wall Street and other markets and fear that it will happen to them as well. And that's the way the crowd usually works, as I'm sure you know. Having lived through a market cycle or few. Where are we right now? Well, we've had a terrific rally phase here. These rallies are looking a little bit overextended, but we would need to see some very clear downward dynamics to break the overall momentum beyond a brief pause. I don't know when that's going to happen. It could happen in the relatively short term, like next week, or it could still be weeks, possibly even a few months away. But I think that you'll spot it when it occurs by looking at the charts in the subscribers chart library, and I think Owen will spot it. And also, if it happens during August, well, he's in the hot seat. Now, what about government bonds? And as I look at U.S. Treasuries here, they're down a full point today. The 30-year bond is, as I speak, 115.11 on the September contract. Now, Treasuries are the soft underbelly of this stock market rally, because if they continue to weaken, and they have weakened over the last few weeks, mind you, they're nowhere near the March lows, but they've given up at least a quarter of the gains from those March lows. And if they continue to head south in prices, in other words, yields rising, that will start to worry the stock market. I wouldn't get overly excited about that prospect at this stage, because I think the bit of shifting of money from bonds into equities has been taking place in here. But if one turns this argument around and says, well, why have stock markets done so well in recent months, or really from mid-April after that rather sharp sell-off that we saw starting from the March highs, and some indices such as the Nasdaq started to decline earlier. Why have markets done so well recently? Well, I think one big factor is that bond markets had been really quite strong, and I think I stressed often that it would be weakness in bond markets that would really unnerve investors. And in March, when I was giving or starting to open some short positions in stock market futures, bond markets were really quite weak overall, and that did help to drag the equity markets down. But as you know, then bonds rallied right up and have only given up about a quarter of those gains in here today. But keep an eye on those bonds, because if we do see long-term interest rates continuing to rise in the United States, at some point that would certainly take a toll as far as the stock market is concerned. The other thing you need to keep an eye on is oil. Now, everybody's very relaxed about oil sort of trading around the $60 level. They've gotten used to it, and people are writing articles about how it's amazing that this has so little effect and so on. Well, think of it in terms of, I'll use a sporting analogy, a boxing analogy. Think of it as a boxer absorbing a little bit too much punishment, and you think, well, man, it's really holding up really very well in here, but then then there comes one punch too many, and bang, down on the floor. So, again, I don't think that these markets have that many more oil shocks in them on the upside. But what would it require? Well, I think we'd have to go to new highs and hold it. What might cause that? After all, I've been saying recently that as far as oil was concerned, we didn't have a backwardation, and therefore I thought it would struggle to hold gains over 60. That's been the case so far, but that backwardation could return relatively quickly. If it does happen, watch out in terms of stock markets. That could be quite dangerous. Where might we get the early signals if stock markets get into trouble? Well, I think you'd probably see it in the NASDAQ. That's a lead indicator. Watch that, because it had rallied back up to its January, or was it December, highs. And that's a critical level psychologically, so keep a close eye on the NASDAQ. I think some of the other markets that have very much been leaders since the 2003 rally commenced, Australia, you might get a good signal there. India is another one, because that's been quite a strong leader, certainly in recent months. So there is a tendency, as you've heard me say before, for the leaders to lead in both directions. Now, moving on to cover the other asset categories, first take currencies. You know, the big question, the big debate is whether, of course, the dollar is in an overall bottoming out process. Now, when it got down towards its historic lows in the U.S. dollar index at the end of last year, got down to around close to the 80 level, didn't quite touch it, but between 80 and 78 on the US dollar index going back into the mid-1990s, you had all the historic lows. And people were extremely bearish, talking about a collapse of the dollar, and as you know, it steadied and it ranged, and then it began to recover a little bit more quickly, and ran up to over 90 on the US dollar index, where it has been running into a lot of resistance. There's psychological, the 90 round number level, and lateral technical resistance evident on the long-term charts, which you can see in the stock market library. Now, we've seen a loss of momentum up here. It could still just be a consolidation, and rising U.S. interest rates, that's another worry for the stock market, but rising U.S. interest rates are a tailwind for the U.S. dollar. But, of course, a lot of that has already been discounted by the gains that we've seen so far, and the dollar is beginning to struggle a little bit. So I maintain that we've probably seen at least a penultimate top in here, and there's a chance that it may have actually been the top for the dollar, but it's pretty evenly balanced, and it sort of swings back and forth in my mind, at any rate, as a sort of a 55-45 proposition. With sometimes greater that the dollar has peaked, and sometimes that it isn't, almost on a daily basis. So I don't know, and neither does anyone else in here, but my feeling is that we've seen very much the best part of the U.S. dollar's rally for the year. And even if it is in an overall bottoming out process, and I suspect it is, and I also suspected that back at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, that it would go eventually back down, retest those historic lows, maybe go a little bit below them, but see a fairly lengthy bottoming out process. That is the history, that is what the history has been for the US dollar in terms of its tops and bottoms. They've tended to be fairly lengthy, particularly the bottoms. Now, there can be exceptions. There's no reason why the dollar has to do that. If it has bottomed, there is, in theory, no reason why it couldn't just continue to move upwards, but I doubt that very much. And I think there will be plenty enough to worry about as far as the U.S. economy is concerned, as people weigh up the prospects for consumption, as that housing boom eventually slows, and look at the debt picture, and so on. So there'll be plenty of factors that will come out and worry them again, the trade figures, and so on. And my feeling is to say that we have already seen the best of the dollar's rally by far, and that we will see it work its way back down and retest that 80 level at least. Now, it's just a matter of when, and whether we get another rally or two on the upside possibly one, but I don't think that much more, before we actually head lower. Now, if the dollar has peaked in here, and some people are wondering if it has, and those will include hedge fund managers and currency investors, speculators, then we would see it first, perhaps, or we would see the most. Or we would see the biggest moves in sectors that would be influenced by a change in the dollar's outlook, and that would be precious metals. And platinum, it's interesting in here today. I think this is probably the second highest close in a number of months or close to it, back up near that psychological $900 level. I've put those charts up on the website. In here today. Gold, not spectacular, but a lot of people have been talking about gold going back down to below the $400 level. How many forecasts have you heard in recent weeks or months calling for gold to go down to the $400 level, 375 or whatever? Well, it's currently trading just under 430 in here right now. Silver also has bounced rather strongly in the last few days. 725 is the close on the September contract. So these have certainly steadied up. Now, if the dollar goes up through that 90 psychological resistance barrier and moves to new highs, indicating that we had seen only a penultimate peak at most, I have no doubt again doubt that these precious metals would fall back a bit. But overall, the precious metals have held up extremely well against the background of the dollar's overall rally. They've been quiet more than anything else. So it does show that there are other factors in there that are extremely important in terms of demand for precious metals. Industrial demand, for one thing, and also people in other countries who have seen gold go to new highs for many years against their currencies, and that's just about everybody. That's the Japanese, it's obviously all the Chinese. It is also not in recent weeks, but gold is not all that far off its all-time, I beg your pardon, not that all that far off this year's high in US dollar terms. As $35 or so, but we have seen it move to new highs against the yen a month or two ago, and hold those gains, which it's been consolidating. New highs against the euro, Swiss franc, sterling. So there's good technical cause there for people to say, wait a minute, your gold is an undervalued real asset. A lot of people have been talking about how cheap it is relative to the oil price. I think gold's cheap relative to just about anything. Look at the Dow gold ratio chart, for instance, in the subscribers library. And I think, therefore, that we're getting investment demand as well as the industrial demand. And that's likely to continue. Now, I do maintain that the precious metals are in a secular bull trend, but it's a mighty slow secular bull trend. That's not unusual at the beginning of these moves. So it's boring far more often than not, and people get impatient, and then you get a relatively quick run, and people get excited again, and then goes into another 6 to 9 month pause. But this looks to me still very much like a bull market and has a long way to go. So I have a core position that I hold in precious metals, and I'm currently long gold bullion. I've got a somewhat bigger position in platinum than in gold bullion, about twice the size, and I have a bigger still position in silver. That latter position, silver position, justified by the fact that it's usually the high beta precious metal, the volatile one, which gives me trading opportunities. But it's been quieter recently because of that strength that we had seen in the US dollar. But again, as I say, if the dollar is on its way back down, then precious metals will run strongly on the upside. If the dollar is not yet on its way back down, then they'll pause and react and ease a little bit further. and take off again later on when the dollar eventually does weaken. And have I mentioned industrial metals? Well, one of the big themes here in terms of supply and elasticity, second only to the energy resource markets. And I have watched with interest as lots and lots of people have put out bearish comments on industrial metals over the last many months, and then we'll get a 5% reaction and 10% in a few instances, but not that many, and people will declare victory here, having been extremely bearish beforehand, and they bounce right back up again. And copper, for instance, had hit new highs recently and is hovering right near those highs. That's currently in the pole position. A number of backwardations still exist in these industrial metals, which suggests to me that the underlying industrial demand is still really quite strong. And last but not least, here we have the agricultural commodities, and a number of those show large base formation developments. They're historically cheap, but they're extremely volatile markets. They offer trading opportunities more than anything else, short-term trading opportunities in futures. That's something that perhaps only a minority of you participate in, but if you do, or what I tell myself is I say never pay up for these things, only buy them after the shakeouts, and when you see them rally up a bit, take the profit. But they are the cheapest of all the various different asset classes, and I think that we will see higher commodity prices, not in any sort of linear fashion, but in a very erratic fashion. Something I've been forecasting for the last 3 years or so, that we would see a continuation of base development and somewhat higher levels in a very volatile fashion, and I could see that pattern continuing for a number of years. Now that's pretty much it, folks. I will wrap up here and just say to you, have an absolutely splendid August. All the best.